Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. In our final episode of the season, we are so grateful to be joined by Sarah Barnes-Abbo as she shares her extraordinary journey her family have been on. At 2.5, her gorgeous, lively little boy became noticeably unwell very quickly. Kian was diagnosed with leukemia, and while this news changed everything, they had enormous hope that Kian's treatment would conquer all. Chemotherapy, as we know, is incredibly powerful, and while it was beating Kian's cancer, it took its toll on his immune system and left him vulnerable to a virus which took hold, and he became paralyzed from the neck down. Kian beat his cancer and he rang that bell, but his fight continues as he regains mobility, strength and life following a tracheostomy. Here we talk about holding on to hope, gratitude for every single good day, Kian's 750 days in hospital and the months Sarah and her family were supported by the Ronald McDonald House. None of us know what tomorrow brings, but Sarah's story will show you that on the darkest days, you are never alone. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Gold Ribbon Conversations. We are here to talk about your little boy, Kian, who is now 8. Take us back to when cancer arrived into your family.
Well, hi, Sinead. Thanks so much for having me on today. I suppose Kian was a little boy who was only 2.5 years old when he was diagnosed with leukemia. So he'd been very active, happy little boy, like any 2-year-old, really. Just kind of coming into his own. But we did notice around Christmas time in 2018 that he had quietened down a little bit, and I felt, gosh, the terrible twos are halfway through, maybe things are just getting a little bit easier, not the typical toddler madness. However, over the course of that month, December 2016, Kian was, he became a little bit lethargic, and he had, you know, viral after viral. So he went to the GP, and this is very typical in the early stages of a child being diagnosed with leukemia. The symptoms are very vague. So he was just a little bit more lethargic, had a few temperatures, didn't seem himself. And it really took until mid-January 2017 for Kian to actually be diagnosed with leukemia. And that was when he became extremely lethargic, difficult to wake in the morning. One morning, had a little bit of blood show with a bloodshot eye, etc. And of course, these are all indications that something isn't right with the child's blood, etc. And very, very rapidly, we took Kian to the out of hours doctor, and very rapidly, we were admitted to the Mercy University Hospital, where bloods were done almost instantaneously. And that was a Sunday, a late Sunday afternoon. And by midnight on Sunday, we were with Kian. My husband was with Kian going to Crumlin by ambulance after having a blood transfusion, just to see him up there, you know, safely. So it's called acute lymphoblastic leukemia for a reason, because the symptoms come on quite quickly, and children are very good at compensating and masking symptoms. You know, they will keep going until, you know, they can't compensate any longer. So Kian was diagnosed that week with leukemia. And, you know, I'll never forget the day that he was diagnosed. We were waiting in a room in his bedroom with him. He wasn't well. And our consultant, her advanced nurse practitioner, and many other people came into the room. And, you know, that moment that you'll always remember, they filed into the room, they all sat down. And, you know, the first words were, yes, unfortunately, Cian does have leukemia. So it's one of those movie moments, sliding doors moments where everything stops. And I remember it very clearly because they let us take it in. It was very upsetting. We, you know, we had to process that. Our poor little boy, 2.5 years old. It's really a body blow. So our consultant, Dr. Andrea Malone, who is just the nicest person you'll ever meet, she gave us time to digest that. And we sat there and then she said, look, this is huge news. Of course, it's really shocking for parents to try and absorb this. But she said, Cian has leukemia, and leukemia is one of the diseases that we can cure. We have a 96%, you know, cure rate for this disease. And while it may not seem like good news right now, it is good news, and you will get through treatment. So that was the very first indicator for me that while we were in a very unfortunate and unfair situation, at the same time, there was hope. And from, you know, even from that first morning when they told us the news, we did have hope that the odds were on Cian's side. So that was very positive in amongst all, you know, the horrifying news, etc. It was a positive that we were able to come back to once we had absorbed what was going on.
And you need that. You need to anchor yourself in that piece of positivity because it moves very quickly after that. A lot of control from listening to parents share on this podcast. A lot of control is kind of taken away from you, and you do have to almost get on this conveyor belt of news and treatment and appointment and test and scheduling.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's 100% correct. I think from that moment that we were given Cian's diagnosis, we immediately were set on a very, you know, a very rigid course that we couldn't stray from. Cian was to be on a certain protocol while they ascertained the level of disease that he had. You know, they don't grade it as they would do in you know, tumor-based cancer. It's risk levels. So Cian actually came back as high risk, which meant he would be on a treatment schedule of 3.5 years. So yeah, from the moment you get this news, you have, you know, intense therapy for the first month, high dose steroids, a lot of chemotherapy. We were on St. John's Wort for 12 days and, you know, we were home then to Cork and in and out to the Mercy University Hospital while we established this new normal. That's what they refer to it as. And I think didn't seem very normal to us, but yeah, it was our new normal. And we had a long road ahead of us. Yeah. Basically, 99.9% of your decision-making and your control as a parent is put to one side. I'm not saying it's taken away from you. You can still make little decisions, but how your child's week goes, the medication they're on, the chemotherapy they're having, where you need to be, when you need to be there, etc. Yeah. What you need to do if your child gets a temperature, it's all written in stone. That doesn't deviate. So you're on this pathway that you can't deviate from, really.
And as you are now plunged into this new normal, life is still going on, other aspects of life. How do you get that news? How do you begin to accept that you're about to go on this new path that you did not expect? And, you know, how do you ring your boss? How do you tell family? How do you compartmentalize all of the other things that were so busy and so important in your life before this day?
Yeah, so basically everything changes in that split second. And I think childhood cancer and a diagnosis, especially an acute diagnosis as Cian had, where my child was very unwell very suddenly, meant that everything stopped. I have a little girl, well now she's 12, but at the time Sophie was only six. She was in senior infants and, you know, very reliant on mommy and daddy and the family unit and Cian and my mom as well, granny. So we were a very tight little family unit here at home. And Sophie's life had never been disrupted in any way. I was always at the school gate to collect her, and it was all, you know, routine and normal, just as a child needs. So obviously when mom and dad took Cian to the hospital or to the doctor that day, and I came back at midnight to say Cian was in an ambulance going to Cromann, her whole little world imploded. So that was very difficult. We were gone for 12 days to Cromann at that point. Sophie was here with my mom. I was extremely lucky that I had my mom here to take care of her at the time. And yeah, a sibling's life will be thrown into total chaos and worry and fear. You can't sugarcoat it. That's how it is. You know how it is with young children. They need their routine. So work had to be put on hold. I was actually at that time a stay-at-home mom. I was planning to go back to work, but at the time Cian was only 2.5, so I was still at home with the children. And my husband obviously had to put work on hold for actually quite a long time. But yeah, everything stops. You have no choice. You're basically bedside with your little boy, waiting for the nurses and doctors to come in to tell you the next stage. Now, when we came home after the initial treatment and started our protocol for the high-risk leukemia that Cian had and the schedule he was on, things became a little more easy when we were back in Cork. So that was a little bit easier to deal with. But we got into that routine, but it was still quite unpredictable. If Cian ever spiked a temp, etc., we were straight back to the ward. We could travel to Cromann for a day ward, for example, and end up staying for a week. Unexpectedly, it's just the nature of it. And we got used to that. So we packed the car for every eventuality. We might, you know, plan to go out for half an hour, come home a week later. So we always had the car packed, almost like when you're going to hospital, having your baby, etc. You have the bag ready in the hallway. We were advised to do that. And it was great advice because we had that scenario many times.
Tell me, how did he respond to this whirlwind situation? I have a 2.5-year-old now, so I'm picturing this and it's very difficult. But do you think he understood? Not to the full extent, obviously, but do you think his body understood that this was here to help him?
Yeah, I mean, for Cian, it was... He became so unwell so quickly that he knew he was unwell, and he was very sick for the first number of weeks with the chemotherapy. And the, you know, some of the chemo is quite difficult for these little bodies to process. So, you know, he very quickly needed to be tube fed. He very quickly needed an NG tube fed via the nasogastric tube. He very quickly needed to he lost his ability to walk for a little while due to a drug called vincristine, which creates, you know, it makes it very difficult. They have peripheral neuropathy, which is something that can affect your nerve endings and make it painful to walk. So he was very unwell for the first few months, and he was miserable, yeah, some days. But like any little boy or girl that age, they just have such get up and go. We found every day, once we got through the first month or two, he was many days back to himself, that he could tolerate it, you know. And the meds helped, you know, supportive meds like anti-sickness, etc. They did help. So with loads of good days in among the bad days, it was just finding, accepting that that was how it was going to be. No, he was great. He has a lot of get up and go. And once he started to get through the first few weeks, he improved an awful lot.
He was getting older, did you feel like he was questioning things more, asking more questions? Was he feeling, or was he just kind of, this was his life, this is all he now knows, that we have, you know, we have this appointment, we have this treatment, we, this is what life is?
Yeah, I suppose when you're 2.5, you know, you're only at that stage of, you know, what is real to you is what's in front of you, yeah, right, in the world around you. You're not like an adult planning, predicting, hoping, you know, you're just living in that moment. So like as Cian progressed through the initial stages of treatment and we got through to maintenance chemotherapy, life opened up for him. He was able to go to Montessori school. He had lost all his hair, you know, but he knew he looked different. He had the NG tube. But still, once he felt like any other child once we got into preschool, and he was doing quite well with that. So, you know, he tolerated a lot of it very well, because I think children, they just have a go button and oftentimes they just go, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did question it. He didn't like going into hospital. He knew he was going to have an injection, or he knew he was going to have, you know, treatment of some of some form, but he became used to it. And I think you can get used to anything. And that's kids, they adapt very easily. So he made his friends in the Mercy Hospital in Cork, in Crumlin. He loved the play specialists who he would meet when he was on day ward, etc. And that really helps, you know. So he normalized it, and we all normalized it. I mean, that went very well. And things were improving for Cian. He was a year and a half into his maintenance, or into his chemotherapy, and he was into his maintenance chemo, which is much less, you know, difficult for a child because the hair grows back, they have less treatment, etc. But of course, that's when we hit kind of a big bump in the road for Cian. And that, I suppose, our story is broken into two halves, having the original leukemia diagnosis where we were able to deal with that quite well. And then Cian having a very unfortunate scenario where he contracted a virus halfway through treatment. And this had a catastrophic effect on his weakened immune system because he was still immunosuppressed. So he contracted a virus, an enterovirus, which is quite a common virus. However, his immune system overreacted to it. That's the best way to describe it. And it attacked itself. So we happened to be in Crumlin at the time. We happened to be in Dublin visiting my sister. It was the weekend of Halloween in 2018. And I knew he was 100%. And we brought him to St. John's Ward to be reviewed on the Sunday. And we went into hospital that day, I think maybe the 29th or 30th of October 2018. And we came out of hospital the 19th of November 2020, so 751 nights later.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So how was he presenting then? You were just feeling like, I just sense, as the mother instinct often kicks in, you could just feel he's not 100%. Let's just get him seen while we're here.
Yeah, no, I knew he was quite lethargic. He had a little up and down with his bloods. You know, when your child has leukemia, you become an amateur hematologist. You know, you become very familiar with the bloods. And every week they would check his bloods and make sure they would titrate his chemo according to, you know, the levels of neutrophils, white blood cells, etc. And he had a little dip with his blood, so I was aware of that. And when he presented as very pale, lethargic, we knew something wasn't right. And of course, you know, previous to the leukemia diagnosis, you'd say, "Ah, he'll be fine. Pop him in the car, take him home." But that changes. You're hyper alert when your child is on chemotherapy. And I said, "There's no way I'm putting my child for 3 hours from Cork to Dublin to Cork into the car. Let's just have him checked out." And when they did his bloods, they realized that his bloods were dipping. He had become quite unwell and pancytopenic, which means all of his blood counts were dropping. So they weren't quite sure what was going on. It was a bank holiday weekend. So, you know, skeleton staff really on the wards, as is always the way. So we had to wait for our team to come back on the Tuesday after the bank holiday. And by that point in time, when our team returned, Cian had taken a very bad turn. Now that it was under control, you know, the ICU had been alerted to the fact that they had a little boy who was quite unwell, and they had thought it was a leukemic relapse or, you know, a different form of cancer. Something had affected his bloods very, very badly. But we went into a situation where Cian actually needed to be resuscitated. He was rushed to ICU. It all happened very quickly, and the chain worked. You know, ICU were paged, they came down. We had a great young doctor who knew what he was doing, thought Cian up, and an excellent team in there who worked very hard to keep Cian with us. And there's no way to sugarcoat that. That's what happened. And after about an hour and a half, he was stabilized, intubated, and he was put on a ventilator to breathe for him. Because basically what we didn't know then was that this virus had attacked his immune system, and he had basically become paralyzed. So his diaphragm had stopped working. He couldn't breathe. He went into respiratory arrest. It was all very acute. And we were so lucky to be in Crumlin. We were so lucky to be on site, to have a fantastic team who knew what they were doing. And, you know, it took time, and we sat in that waiting room, the ICU waiting room, for quite some time, and it was really terrifying. You know, you can't explain that feeling unless you've been there, really. You can't understand really how it feels until you're in that position. And it is where the, you know, touch and go. You know, it is that point in time where you think, is this really happening? Now, we're very lucky that Cian was stabilised, and our doctor came out to us and said, yes, he's stable. He is, something's happened. We're not quite sure what, but because he's on, you know, on chemotherapy, this is often the case that children could react to something that it's unpredictable. And at that point in time, we weren't sure what was going to happen. But over a course of a number of days, Cian was stabilised. He started to improve. They were hoping to take him off the ventilation, but this is where we ran into a major speed bump. They started to realise that Cian, once they weaned to sedation, was actually not moving at all. And they asked me, you know, is he a very quiet child? And I said, absolutely not. No way. He's 3.5-year-old boy, you know, very much active. And then they realized that he had a paralysis, a neuropathy that, you know, he couldn't move at all. So obviously the thought of taking him off the ventilator, weaning him off, became redundant. They couldn't do that. And then that's when we entered our next phase of, you know, almost 20 months in hospital, because it became very apparent that Cian had basically acquired a spinal injury due to his immune system attacking itself, and he had a condition called AFM, which is acute flaccid myelitis, which is basically a modern day polio, highly unusual. They had never seen that in Crumlin. They had it in maybe elsewhere in the country, but it was very unusual. So now you have a little boy with this polio-like situation and disease, who is also on chemotherapy, who is on a ventilator, who is in ICU. And the hits kept coming, you know. The situation went from being, you know, bad to worse. And he was very unwell. So they had to take him off all chemotherapy. And really, we weren't very sure what the path would be. We didn't know if we would come out of ICU. We didn't know if Cian would regain any movement. All we knew was that he was being kept stable and he was on this life support equipment, basically. So they have a fantastic team in Crumlin, in the ICU, and the intensivists are amazing. And little by little, they worked out exactly what was wrong with Cian. They realized that he had projected, you know, 20 months in hospital, and Cian needed to be able to breathe more comfortably because he was intubated via the nose. So they decided they would, Cian would need a tracheostomy, and which we did in January 2019. So that actually is a huge intervention, and that is another life-changing moment for a child, because I suppose, as most people now are quite familiar with during COVID, the biggest fear anyone would have would be to be in ICU, intubated and ventilated. So a tracheostomy, now people are much more aware of what it entails. It entails a huge ICU effort, and the cares around it are very, very high level. So Cian got his tracheostomy, remained ventilated and paralysed really from the neck down in ICU. And it undoubtedly was a positive step for him to get the tracheostomy, because it gave him more freedom to do physio. He wasn't just attached to the ventilator, the big ventilator in ICU. So it gave him more freedom, but of course it was very invasive and very difficult to explain to a little boy. And with a tracheostomy tube, you initially have no voice. You can't get air over your vocal cords. So it was very intense, very scary. And we were living in the Ronald McDonald House while all of this was going on. So, yeah, it was something we couldn't have predicted, and something that we weren't greatly equipped to deal with.
I think that's the important piece, because you feel like surely after a diagnosis of leukemia, you've hit the bottom. You're starting from there, and you're finding strength, and you're pulling on all your reserves to keep going, to keep trusting, to keep being positive. And you're almost halfway through the treatment plan, and you can feel like this is going to be a story that is behind us.
Yeah, I mean, it was a whirlwind. It really hit very hard. And between Cian's, you know, acute admission to ICU, which was Halloween actually, 2018, and getting the tracheostomy in the January just after Christmas, we went through, you know, every possible emotion. And we, like, as you just mentioned, we really questioned, you know, we thought Kian's leukemia diagnosis was the worst day ever, worst day of our lives. But I think what you learn on this journey is that it's better not to deal in these absolutes. Oh, it's the best day, it's the worst day, because every day is different. Every day is often a chance to start again in certain ways. And definitely when this happened, we had to become very tough. You have to toughen up, because once we realized we would be there for the bones of 2 years, it was, you know, how are we going to do family? How are we going to do work? It all happened again. And we had a huge amount of help. We had amazing teams, amazing people, you know, an ICU team. You're going to have everything from a nutritionist to an OT, physio, nurses, doctors, HCAs, psychologists. You have a massive team around you. And while it's busy and exhausting, you never really feel unsupported. You're very much supported. And then, of course, we lived in the Ronald McDonald House, which was our saving grace. I think we would not have gotten through the 2 years without that help, not in any way. We needed somewhere to call home. And, you know, I think people hear a lot about the Ronald McDonald House now, and you probably have spoken to many people who've used it. But when you come out of an ICU after 12 hours, a 12-hour day, it's intense. You come out the door, you sit on the plastic chair. And if you didn't have somewhere to call home, I do think when you're in such an extreme scenario, it would be very easy to just say, I can't do this. So having that support behind us, the non-medical side was fantastic. That really brought us, you know, gave us the comforts of home, gave us support, gave us people to have a chat with at the end of the day, and also gave us relief from the highly medicalized world in which we're, you know, we're plunged into. And you see it all in ICU. There's nothing you don't see, and there's nothing you don't become aware of, because you're in a glass box with your little boy, you know. And he was fantastic. You know, Kian had school in ICU. He, as he became better, started to regain more and more function and more mobility, he was able to have school. He went back on chemo. Things improved for him. And it sounds horrific to think of a child living in an ICU for 8 months, but his room was actually full of fun, and he had games and toys, and the teachers would come. So it became easier. And they told us in ICU, they said, you know, gradually the good days will outnumber the bad. That's what we hope for, and that's what happened for us.
I need to ask, how is he now?
So he's great. He's he came home in November 2020. We left Crumlin. We went to CUH in Cork for a number of months, and then we were very lucky to be able to come home November 2020, in the height of COVID, of course, which was difficult for everybody. But we got Kian home, and he's now in school. He's in second class, doing really well. He still has his ventilator and his tracheostomy, but he's made a huge amount of progress. He uses a wheelchair, but he's come so far. He's made a huge neurological, you know, neuromuscular recovery, which really wasn't anticipated, which is testament to the power of, I think, a pediatric patient having, you know, children have, I think, neuroplasticity is on their side. They have ways of regaining functionality that maybe adults wouldn't have the same recovery potential. So he's doing really well. He just made his first communion. He likes to, he loves drama. He loves athletics, like para athletics. He does a lot of things now that we never thought were going to be possible. And, you know, he rang the bell back in 2020 for finishing his chemotherapy after the 3.5 years. So he's like, yeah, any other little boy now, just enjoying life. And it's fantastic to see.
So from a leukemia perspective, it feels like he, despite this infection, he managed to beat it.
Yeah, I think we're extremely lucky. You know, we did not cruise through treatment. Some children actually, you know, we were told day one, you can never anticipate which child will cruise through treatment very well and just, you know, manage it extremely well, and which children might have a few dips, you know, along the way. But I would say from the leukemia perspective that, yes, there are after effects, there are late effects, there are side effects, but we've thankfully successfully completed treatment, and we feel very hopeful that that, you know, will remain to be the case. And I think every year he grows stronger, and he's becoming more and more able for things, and he's regaining more and more abilities to walk. You know, he's still left with some paralysis, but things are definitely improving for him.
Do you see a future where he will be able to walk? He will be able to engage in you know, more play, more sport, more activity, more life as he grows older?
Yeah. I mean, Ken, yeah, he's up and walking again now, and he's doing very, very well. He needs a lot of physiotherapy. And I think, you know, here in Ireland at the moment, ideally for Ken, we'd attend a rehabilitation unit for intense physiotherapy. And we're working on that. You know, we're working on getting him to maybe the National Rehab Hospital at some point in the not so distant future. We are trying very hard, because children like Ken, with making neuromuscular recoveries from an acquired spinal injury, are children who need intensive physio. Now, at the moment in Ireland, it's not the case that you can get much physiotherapy or OT as much as you would need for a child in that scenario. So we do a lot of it with him ourselves, and his doctors are delighted with him. You know, they're really, really happy with him, and they feel that from a neurological point of view, the recovery that Cian has made is off the charts. It's really, really, really good. So it's about time. And I think a lot of our consultants had said that to us, you know, with this type of recovery, it's about time, and it's about consistency. And yeah, I think at one point all we could see was the limitations, but now things have changed and we can just see so much potential for him.
Many children living outside Dublin also attend one of the 16 shared care or regional hospitals closer to their home. There, they are treated in isolation rooms and cannot leave to use the playroom or other ward facilities. Childhood Cancer Ireland's shared care programme aims to improve facilities and support for those children and their parents. We fund equipment such as wall-mounted cardiac monitors and thermometers, TVs, DVD players, PlayStations and other gaming devices, electric beds, lie-flat day beds for parents and vinyl wall art to brighten up the isolation rooms and create a brighter space for children with cancer. To date, Childhood Cancer Ireland has refurbished isolation and or treatment rooms in 8 hospitals around the country and continues to work on the rest.
How are you?
Busy. Yeah, no, we're fine. You know, we've had a lot of time to process everything that happened over the last number of years for Cian. You know, 2017 to the present day is a long time to have a child who has a life-limiting condition and then an additional life-limiting condition. We have learned an awful lot. We learned we had to become very tough in terms of what we dealt with medically. I mean, we had to be trained to deal with airway management, ventilation, all of that is our skill set now. We had to be able to bring Cian home successfully. So we were trained by the teams in Crumlin, you know, to be able to manage a ventilator, a tracheostomy, etc., at home. And we have home nursing for Cian. He has to be he has to have a nurse every night, overnight, to wash them, you know, the ventilator, etc., and to intervene if he needs anything, because it's still almost like an ICU or a high dependency unit bedroom at nighttime, because he is ventilated by night. So we're fine. We're very busy. We're really lucky in the people we have around us helping us. And, you know, from the leukemia perspective, in a way, it feels like that chapter has closed. We're always mindful of it, but we feel like that chapter has closed. The side effects, et cetera, that we've had from that, we've just had to accept it all as part of the journey. Mm. And I think there's never predicted, nothing is set in stone when your child is diagnosed with cancer. You just don't know where the road is going to take you. We learned that very early on. And I think you have to be open to these bumps on the road, and you have to hope for the best. And I think we had a great consultant, a neurologist in Dublin, who said, even though, you know, he has such a catastrophic prognosis at the time, she said, you have to retain hope, because children are amazing and children get through so much. And I think that's important, what we do know and how we approach life, because we've seen such dark days with Cian, you know, when we were attached to four or five different machines in an ICU, unable to leave the room. So I think when you come to that point and you come past that point, you really appreciate the little things. So like, we're busy and half the time it's a very crazy house, but you know, we're very grateful to be where we are today and having a happy little boy in school and happy big sister and, you know, life and work and things resuming.
I'm sure there were times where you never imagined that you'd be in this position now where things are feeling positive and stable.
Yeah. I mean, look, when we were in ICU and when Cian was in ICU for so long, I think the average stay is 3 to 4 nights. And, you know, when you're in there for a prolonged time period, you look around, and once you become used to the environment, you know, you realize that's the care ceiling. There's nowhere to go after ICU. And while you're in ICU, I think you're there because you're very unwell, or you're post-op, or you know, there's something going on that you need the highest level of care provided by a hospital. So it's difficult to explain fully, but you do live, it's like a weight on your shoulders. It's like a shadow hanging over you, I think, while you're there. I never took for granted. We never did take for granted that we would walk out of ICU. We weren't sure. And we had a few false starts, you know. He was maybe discharged to a different ward at different times, and then we had to return because he became unwell again. But he bounced back, and that's what we saw with Cian. He started to bounce back much faster. And yeah, there are days when I look back and think, how did we get through it? But at the time, you're just on autopilot and you just do what you can to get through. No, I didn't predict, when Cian was so unwell, I didn't predict that we'd be back home and he could run in the garden and play and be so happy again. So I think you always have to have hope. Sometimes it's very difficult because many children are faced with huge battles. And for Cian, he had a huge battle, but I mean, time helped, and he has a great little spirit in him, so that really helped as well. But we were fortunate that the interventions we needed were there and the treatment we needed was there. It's not always the case. And I think as a mum and dad of a child who's had cancer, there's always that in the back of your mind, you know, we're very lucky our little boy came out of treatment. You know, it's the roll of a dice. There are parents whose children have different types of cancer, which are much, as you know, much more difficult to treat and which can recur and which can be a lot more catastrophic for the child, and there's battles that can't be won. And I think as a parent, when you come through all of this, you're so mindful of that and it never leaves you, and you think of all the other mums and dads and children you met along the way. And that's one of the hardest parts, actually, you know, because the stories, there can be some very sad stories.
As has been shared here.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so bravely.
Was there a time where you needed support for you, where you felt like, or have you managed to lean into how to unravel what had occurred so as to not stay held in maybe hypervigilance or worry or fear or concern or stress?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that time is fantastic. And we were very lucky in that we have our little boy at home and very well now. So that's the first, you know, obviously that's the first major relief. To get Cian through the front door after 2 years was a huge, huge moment in our lives. As for the acknowledging it yourself and coming to terms with what's happened, that's a much longer journey. It takes a lot of time. When we were on site in the hospital, we had huge support. You know, there's psychologists who come and talk to the parents and children, whether they're from ICU or St. John's ward or TCU, which was our other stand down ward. So we had a lot of input. Then when you come home, of course, it's a little bit different because it's very hard work. Obviously, we had a huge medical setup here for a long time and it can be very busy. And, you know, in our family, we had 3 days after Cian rang the bell for finishing treatment for leukemia. My mum was actually diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So that was a very tough time. You know, it just showed how cancer can be quite relentless and how it can really creep up on you very quickly and So we had a very bittersweet time then, because my little boy was so well and he was going to come home, but my mum became very unwell. And, you know, she only had a year after her diagnosis until she passed away. So she was really the backbone of our family here and had done so much for us when Cian was unwell and minding my little girl, etc. So that, yeah, that was a real blow. And I think coming back from that was nearly harder, because to reason why that would happen, you know, on the back of something so good and Cian coming home and being so well. But that's life. And I think that's what I've learned about cancer, is it doesn't discriminate. It, when it comes along, and you have to, it's hard to deal with it. And the aftermath of that was difficult, you know, but I think time is a healer, and, you know, you have to find the joy in the little moments. And we've had a lot of that. And even when my poor mum was unwell, she was fantastic. You know, she always found a way to be with the grandchildren, to have fun with them. And she had a great resilience about her as well. So yeah, I think you have to accept the down days. You have to know that every day is a reset. And that's what we learned while in hospital with Cian. And that's what he showed us, you know, that every day he was able to reset and have a good day despite all the limitations. And I think now that we've come through all of this, and we still live a very medicalized life, and we still have our moments where we get a little worried if he's unwell, he needs to go to hospital, etc. But I think we've built up a big body of experience and resilience, and you can draw on that. And of course, obviously, you know, other parents' stories, listening to this podcast, having the support from the different charities has been fantastic too, because it's not just about being in treatment, it's about the aftermath of treatment and, you know, normalizing everything once you get home with your child. And even though your child might be well, you still have to process it.
That is just such an important point, because that's why I always ask, you know, how are you? Because the conversations shared here, yes, of course, it's the story and the journey of the child's diagnosis and fight, but to acknowledge that it is a trauma done onto the parents and anybody who loves this family, to see what cancer can do and how it can completely disrupt your life, but also disrupt your naivety, you know, for how simple life used to be. Now you live with the daily, you know, sight of actually, well, what can happen? And that's a hard thing for parents, because look, we're born stressed and concerned for our children. That's all we want. But to see the darkest days, you need help with that too, because that is a parent's worst nightmare. And the podcast, talking to the parents, peer support within the cancer charities, talking to people who have walked this path, who can help you somehow so that you can return home with your child, but also return home to yourself and to your own security and your own safety and your own peace of mind, because it is a heavy thing to hold. So thank you for bringing that up.
Changing, yeah, it is life changing. And I think it's definitely, you get a lot of strength from other parents, and also all of the people that, you know, the people who work directly with parents, whether it's a CNS or an AMP, any of the people in the hospital scenario who work with you, but also in the charities, and what they provide, you know, virtual coffee mornings, opportunities to talk with other parents who've been in a similar scenario. That's really helpful. The peer support is great. And I think that's really, really nice that parents can be connected via these charities and, you know, maybe tell a little bit of your own story, but also hear what other parents have gone through. And you definitely find, you know, fellow moms and dads who've been down that road. You don't need to explain what the long corridor is. Everybody knows. You don't need to explain that, you know, gut-wrenching moment when your child is diagnosed. They've been there too. And I think that does really help, because it's nice to feel that there's some community of parents who've been through this, and of course, children who've been through this as well.
Thank you for sharing your story today and all of those moments, because you will have supported somebody who is listening, who is at the beginning or the middle or the darkest days in this journey who are connecting with this podcast and with this community to get that strength that you're passing back. You know, you've lived it, you've walked it, you've survived it, and you're passing back that strength by telling your story. And I really want to thank you for that. I know it was a difficult conversation, and oh my God, he has been through so much, as you all have. But I'm so happy to hear that he is home, he is doing well, and he really does have a bright future ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Sinead. I was delighted to have the chat with you. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.